summer's lease hath all too short a date, as their great Warwickshire cricketer Bill Shakespeare once said. And alas, this fabulous season has raised its bat for the final time and strolled gloriously to the boundary rope, or boundary Toblerone as it now is. Cricket is over for the year. England are men's cricket world champions. The Ashes once again produced magnificent drama, albeit with those pesky Aussies keeping the urn at home. And here I am to talk all things cricket with England's leading wicket taker. Thy eternal summer shall not fade, as that sonnet goes on to say. It's Stuart Broad. Stuart, I'm just looking over the table and I can see something in your pocket. It looks a bit like David Warner.
Do you know what that is? That's the most heard saying that I've had in the last week, for sure. Yeah, I mean, I played golf at Wentworth in the Pro-Am, yes, the BMW, and every hole someone would shout, David Warner in that pocket, Broadie! Which has made me smile, I must admit. But it's,
Did you see that coming? Did you know that you would have the wood over him before it began? I can't remember if we talked about it.
Not at all. I mean, he's someone who has always had the better of me, I think, as a batsman in Ashes series. He's aggressive. He's always hit me for boundaries through the offside. And he's a very difficult batsman to bowl at in the third innings. You know, if Australia have got a lead and he takes it on. But it was particularly pleasing this summer for me in the fact that I actually did a lot of research into him before the series. I thought, he's a key player for them, top of the order. Right. I've got to make inroads with this new ball. What do I need to do differently to him? And not often in sport does that sort of research or planning pay you back.
Right.
And I feel like it did this summer. You know,
you worked him out technically, and by the time you were halfway through this, you had also got him psychologically, I guess.
I think so. I mean, Trevor Bayliss, our head coach, had a theory that if you bowled a leg stump to Warner, he didn't really score through the leg side. He was very offside dominant, and you could really shut him down if you bowled a leg stump, which for me, bowling round the wicket, I wanted to bowl round the wicket.
Yeah.
That angle doesn't quite work, because if you go leg stump, obviously you can get clipped to fine leg and things. But it got my mind thinking that actually, let's try and shut the offside down. Mm-hmm. I've always looked for his outside edge and it's never really worked. So I said, right, let's try and shut the offside down, not let him drive me or hit me through the offside for four, and try and hit his stumps as often as possible. And could see from the dismissals, there are a few LBWs, a bowled.
Gloving to the wicketkeeper.
And a couple of sort of, you know, ones he's tried to leave that he's nicked. And I think my planning pre-series came together. And by the end, I think I was surprised he didn't try and change something.
Yeah, we'll all remember that. I was going to say inscrutable, but perhaps it was scrutable, that the expression on his face, that sort of smile he had. You thought, he's really putting up a front, but he must be seething inside with himself. I mean,
goodness. Yeah, I'm just, obviously he's a world-class player and has been for many, many years, averages nearly 50 in Test cricket. I think the thing that surprised me is that he didn't try and play a one-day innings at one stage.
Yeah, quite.
I mean, let's not...
Because he had a good World Cup.
Yeah, really good World Cup. I mean, look, the pitches were tough to bat on with the brand new ball. I think they were dry, so the wobble seam like nipped early. And you can see that throughout the series. There were wickets in the first 10 overs. Yeah. But I don't think anyone would have blamed him at the oval if he'd have charged at me or tried to hit me over cover or over the back of over my head or anything, really. It was... that was a little success, but obviously disappointed that we didn't lift the urn, because that was the summer's aim for the Test side, without a doubt. But do I think 2-2 was a fair result? Yeah, I do. Yeah. I think both teams were really, really similar. I think Steve Smith had a huge influence on the series.
Yes,
he was their best batsman by a country mile, and he didn't deserve to be on a losing side, I don't think.
That's very well and gracefully put. And of course, in Labuschagne, because of his concussion injury, they discovered a not dissimilar kind of batsman for the middle order, the upper middle order, who proved himself a huge success.
He's going to have a really good Test career, I think. He scored a lot of runs for Glamorgan, didn't he? It's that sort of old conversation that we as English, we sort of let the Aussies come over and practice in our conditions, whereas, you know, Rooty doesn't get a go for Queensland, does he, before the next Ashes? That's been a debate for years, hasn't it? But, yeah, he looks a really good player. I mean, Smith, like I said, I planned a lot for Warner, I planned a lot for Smith. I just, actually, nothing seemed to work. He played beautifully. He was as awkward to bowl at as anyone I've ever bowled at. Yeah. He was disciplined. It wasn't, he didn't get to 70 and change tempo. He just played and played and played.
He does that thing of managing to make a leave look like a victory for him. You know what I mean? A really positive action, leaving a cricket ball. Whereas sometimes some batsmen, they leave it and it looks as if, he just about left it. He nearly didn't. But which has a psychological effect to it. It gives him an aura, doesn't it? So that it makes him theatrical. That famous sort of swat and the sort of violence of his leaving is almost greater than the violence of his hitting.
It's bizarre. I mean, I don't mean any sort of disservice by him here, but if you were to buy a ticket to go and watch a batsman, it would be a Virat Kohli or a De Villiers or a Butler or a Root or a Stokes. Like the shot making they play can be
the
beautiful.
Elegance, the grace.
And he doesn't have that, but you have his numbers are extraordinary,
breathtaking.
And he just has a method. Like Alistair Cook had a method, and actually Cookie and Graham Gooch used to just talk about batting as a method, and Steve Smith is the greatest example of that.
It's something you see in sport, isn't it, a lot? You see, the naturally talented player, the outrageously physically gifted player, and the player who puts together a technique. You see it in golf. You know, Faldo was not the most naturally graceful golfer, but for a time he was the best golfer in the world for a number of years. Steve Davis versus, you know, Jimmy White or Sullivan. You know, there's that sort of thing, and it's like classical versus romantic or something, and you see it in all sport and in all life, really. And it's part of the joy of cricket, because you're close up on personality in all the disciplines, and you can see that, and it's something you can enjoy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, we didn't get it 100% right to Smith, I don't think. You know, I think we took away home advantage. You know, when I look back at the 2015 series, he scored no runs at Cardiff, no runs at Trent Bridge, no runs at Edgbaston, and we played on green tinge pitches that nipped with bounce.
Yes. Were you disappointed with the preparation of the pitches all round?
Later on, I mean, Edgbaston, Old Trafford, very. I think that they lacked the pace. I don't know if that was because of the World Cup and the busyness of the summer, whether they just really struggled to keep moisture in the pitches. I mean, as an England team, we wanted no spin.
I wouldn't want you to go in public as complaining against the county their budgets and so on. But there is an element, isn't there, that they want a five-day pitch. They want a big crowd on the fifth day. They don't want a pitch which might see a result by the third day or the morning of the fourth, ideally. Just for their
box
office.
Some grounds, I think. Yeah. I mean, for us, 1-1 in the Ashes series going to Old Trafford, that would have been the last pitch we wanted as a team.
Yeah.
You know, as Old Trafford, great, they made their £8 million and had 5 days interesting cricket. And it was a decent test match pitch.
Yeah. And it could have gone either way.
But not the test match pitch you'd want to play Australia on at 1-1. You know, slow, no grass, completely bare, spinner bowling within an hour and 15 of the first morning. I think you want a pitch in England. I mean, the pitches we played India on the year before, perfect, brilliant series.
Yes.
Exciting, runs scored, nipped a little bit, catches caught, catches dropped. Whereas that Old Trafford pitch, if you didn't win that toss, very, very difficult to win that game.
You could see Jofra Archer's disappointment in it. He seemed to slump after two overs.
I don't know if that was disappointment in the temperature up there.
Oh, it was that too, actually. It wasn't exactly Barbadian.
But
I
think as a team, we couldn't hide our disappointment in that pitch. It was everything that we didn't want at 1-1. Yeah. And I'm sure Old Trafford knew that as well, whether they just got the preparation wrong or actually the orders were made wrong, I don't know. But one thing that we'll take from this Ashes series, though it was 2-2 and Australia keep the urn, it had entertainment and it had drama and excitement. And actually, having finished the series a week ago, the atmosphere around the team and the people we've seen and the supporters has been positive. Mm. And although, you know, if you lose the urn, you don't win the urn. It's my first experience of doing that in England. You could expect quite a negative backlash. Mm. But actually, I think the supporters have enjoyed the spirit of the series. There couldn't have been more theatre, really.
Goodness.
In all of it, even the Lords game that had 2.5
Lords
days washed out,
yeah,
we could really have pushed a result there. So, when you're reflecting on the summer, you have that real disappointment that Australia lifted the urn at the Oval, which is heartbreaking. Mm. But actually, for Test cricket, it shows that it's truly alive.
If there weren't this metaphor of an urn, it would just be if it was South Africa, you'd say, oh, we drew the series against South Africa, we drew the series against Australia. But because there is this idea of someone retaining or regaining the Ashes, in that sense, it was a disappointment. But I think if you're in April and saying, well, England will end the cricket season as white ball world champions of cricket, and the Red Bull team will draw a brilliant series against the Australians, who go, oh, I'll take that, you know? Especially winning at the Oval in such a emphatic and
no, I wouldn't have
thrilling
taken that.
No,
I wanted
you wouldn't.
The win. I wanted
quite
the
right,
win and the win.
No, you wouldn't have taken it, all right, okay. Yes, no, that's fair. But I think, as you say, not having got the win, there's a lot to be proud of and a lot to be positive about.
Yeah, huge amount to be proud of. I mean, that it seems a long time ago now, that World Cup win, doesn't it?
But it does, yeah.
I just keep thinking, how must Ben Stokes be feeling, just sat at home trying to unwind from the summer he's experienced? He's had one of the greatest matches in a World Cup final to get the team over the line. Yeah. To think that those sort of emotions would never be beaten. Arguably, Headingley outdoes that and continues and plays every game in the summer, apart from the Ireland Test match. It's incredible fitness, incredible everything you'd look for in an England cricketer, and it's been very special to be close to him this summer, because people will be talking about Stokes 2019 for many years.
They will, and I think the thing that's changed because of the unfortunate incident in Bristol and, you know, the nightclub and all of that, people might have thought, because, you know, we are so terrible as human beings in taking first impressions. Here's a guy with tattoo sleeves who got in trouble in a nightclub. He's obviously not very bright upstairs, but you watch him as a cricketer, you realise he's a furiously intelligent cricketer. He really understands the game. He knows just how to play and what to play. And in interviews you see also he's a stand-up guy, a really pleasant and smart and sorted individual, which is terrific for his future.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, he's a leader.
Yeah.
Which... You don't need just in sport. You need leaders in business. You need in every walk of life. You need leaders within little groups, don't you?
He is
a natural leader. He's motivating when he speaks. He thinks quite logically about situations in games. I've seen that. Do I think he's a future captain? I think Rooty's the man for the job at the minute. I know there was question marks at the end of the summer, but he's someone who can lead this team forward. Would I want that sort of added pressure on a cricketer like Stokes? He's an all-action cricketer.
Yeah.
You need him to be able to influence games at different period of time. Would I want to swarm him with having to be in the game 24/7? Probably not.
Yeah.
But, you know, we saw it with Botham, Flint, these sort of cricketers.
It doesn't help, does it?
They're natural leaders. You just let them lead within a group. I don't think you need them to be the top leader who's having to deal with selection meetings and
make them prefect.
What time's the bus leaving and all that sort of thing. You know, just let Stokesy whack sixes and take great catches and bowl quick.
Well, you spoke about his time off and his decompression. As soon as the Oval Test was over, virtually, you were off to Barcelona, and then lots of wonderful golf. And
yeah, I've had a great two weeks. Yeah, I think you need that. After we played 6 test matches in 7 weeks. I haven't seen my family a lot at all, really. And you sort of you get encapsulated in a cricket series, and you do need a bit of a chill out time. So yeah. Very fortunate to play in the pro-am at the golf, which
and played how did with you Danny. Do?
I played okay, actually. Yeah. I played okay. I played with Danny Willett, who ended up winning the tournament on the Sunday, which was
his first big win since the Masters.
Yeah,
really,
brilliant. He was such a nice guy. He helped us all throughout the round, gave us little tips, and helped us with our putting. And
what do you play off?
I play off 10.
It's
not bad.
It's
not bad. But actually, it's great to play in these sort of things and follow the golfers, because you actually, once you get to know someone, you then follow them quite intently, don't
yes,
you? So I was watching all his rounds, all his shots, and was really happy for him on Sunday when he won. And yeah, then nipped over to Barcelona, first trip there, which was what a wonderful place.
It is.
For me, I like food and red wine, so it's,
you chose
you'd
the right
say
place.
It's quite a good place to go, really, wouldn't you?
Yes.
And then is it Monday? Jimmy and I, we have a Broad versus Anderson Ryder Cup each year, so we're flying off for two and a half days golf with teams of 12
and
each.
And you do four balls and foursomes and singles.
Yeah,
exactly,
it's pretty much
format.
Burnley versus Nottingham. That's how it ends up. But it's a great couple of days. So yeah, we're really excited about that. And then life as a professional sportsman never really leaves you. We've got the 18th of October is our next sort of meet up as a team. Fitness testing, all the fat percentage testing,
in order to prepare for the tour. To
yeah,
New
we
Zealand
do. I mean, we
Sri
do it
Lanka.
Three times a year, so they make sure we're not putting weight on, and yeah. make sure our fitness levels haven't dropped. So we've got to do our 2K run in under 7.5 minutes, all that sort of stuff. So I think throughout this period of time, you've still got to have half an eye on that, because you know every time you eat a donut, you're thinking, I've got to run this off. This has got to
so
leave
the
me.
Tapas is all right, but not the donut.
Yeah, the tapas fair. Is good. Yeah, no dessert.
Well, the winter, there's been selection news, and obviously I don't want you to criticise the selectors or put yourself in an invidious position, but I was pretty shocked that they dropped Johnny Bairstow, though it must be said he hasn't been in form. As a batsman in particular, has he? He's averaged, what in the 20s, which for a man of his...
Well, I'm going to flip this round.
Yeah.
Your head selector, what would you have done? Be a good job for you, that, I think. You fancy
wow.
that? What? Next time that comes up, you like watching cricket, don't you?
I could never upset people. I'm
so
complete wuss.
You go and watch a bit of cricket, you decide which players you like the look of, and then you pick them.
I have the mental toughness of a piece of limp celery. All the snap's gone out of me, and that's it. I mean,
yeah. Could you get an assistant in to make the phone call, the bad phone call? Sorry, you dropped.
Well, A, I don't know enough about the county game to know who the young players coming up are. I've just got to be honest about that. I'm just simply not informed enough. And B, I have, you know, so I mean, Johnny Bairstow, or as my husband calls him, Ron Weasels, because he always forgets his name. He thinks he looks like Rupert Grint. I think a lot of England fans have great affection for him. You know, his character is interesting. And he's done, you know, well for us. And indeed, in the Headingley test, I think the way he stormed out was really helpful, indeed instrumental with Ben Stokes in getting that victory. So it seems tough. And, you know, and I'm not good at tough. It's just not what I'm...
I wonder whether it's a bit of a... one thing that can be overlooked a little bit is this World Cup winning group went through such emotions and elation and high pressure for 3 months. And then basically had a week to try and let that sink in and then flip into an Ashes series.
Yeah.
Could partly be a bit of a... What's that? Is it decompression? You know, when you come up from water too quickly and you need to just sort of...
Or in the gym, and you've got to have the recovery time or you'll be weaker.
I wonder whether... I mean, I know that a few of the guys aren't going on the T20 leg, are they,
of the
New Zealand trip. I wonder whether there's a bit of a... Try and sort of relax for a little bit, refresh, and come back as a cricketer very excited. Will Johnny Bairstow play Test cricket again? Absolutely.
Of course he will, yes. I think that's right, isn't it? It's about whether he will deal with the disappointment and he will, as you say, come back stronger than ever before.
I mean, there's a new... I think being missing out of a tour years ago was a huge thing, wasn't it? Like, oh, you've been dropped. Yeah. It was actually now there's this Test Championship. The New Zealand tour's not in this Test Championship, so you can't actually win.
Oh, is it not?
You can't win league points for winning in New Zealand, whereas we go to South Africa and there's four tests. You can win league points in South Africa. So there could be a thought process of...
Hold off till then.
And then get fresh for South Africa. I don't know what the thought process is, because I must admit, I saw on Twitter that Johnny had missed out. I had no idea he wouldn't be going. So
and in the Whitepool game, the other shot was Liam Plunkett being dropped, which seemed extraordinary because he was so successful.
There was a decision to make in that Whitepool setup, isn't there? You either say, what a brilliant 4 years World Cup win, give that group another year of success to then slowly nip in newer players, or you go, right, that's finished, we move on.
Toughness.
You can go either way on that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, because it's a verb. A team is a process, a verb. It's always moving. It's not a fixed noun. It's not like that's the England team. It's always got to be changing. It's always developing. And, you know, it seems like, to a man of my age, it seems like yesterday that you'd say England, you'd think Flintoff, Peterson. But, you know, they fall away and new ones come in, and they seem like the England team that will be there forever. And then they slowly fade away. And so you have to get used to that. It's how it works, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, and there were questions over Captain Morgan, weren't there? As in, will he continue? I mean, that was always going to be very much his own decision.
And he made it strongly and quickly.
Yeah, the last thing you want to do is finish the World Cup and then come back and play and almost feel like you've lost the love for it.
Yeah.
But I think he'll look at that T20 World Cup in Australia in about 14 months' time.
Yes.
And think he can win that with this team.
Yeah. That's amazing. Well, listen, this has just been terrific, and I'm afraid time has caught us out. We have to go back to Pavilion for tea, but we'll be back out with facing the barnstorming bouncers of people's questions. So hang on, and we'll be back in a bit.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
And welcome back to Broad and Fry. We've got lots of questions, and I want to start with one. Which I want to put you on the spot here, because Joanna Kendall sent a question a good month or so ago, saying, nice little knock from Stuart in the first test. Question for the podcast, how and when did the bat twirling start, and do you know you're doing it? And then Simon Andrew has written more recently, please remind Stuart to follow up on the story behind his bat spinning, because you refused to answer it. You said it's a kind of secret thing, so we were kind of interested. Maybe this was a technique, something you didn't want the bowlers to know about?
Yeah, a little. I worked with the Nottinghamshire psychologist Matt Thompson a little bit when I was playing for Notts in April, May and June about when I get to the crease. Like when I'm bowling, I'm very focused. I've got a real sort of strict routine. I know what I'm going to deliver. You're sort of in charge of the game as a bowler.
Yeah.
Whereas as a batsman, you're very reactive. So I found myself getting in a bad habit of looking at fielder's move or, yeah. or they put another slip in. Oh, should I try that? Should I try that? And overthinking before the ball gets delivered.
Yeah.
Whereas actually, I'm a better cricketer when I'm quite reactive. And so I came up with this theory that in between balls, twizzle the bat and look at the bat to take away my mind thinking about the game too much.
Right.
So not analysing, oh, the mid-on's gone a bit wider. Can I try and hit it through straight to mid-on? It's too complicated for me that, you know.
Gotcha.
Let's so it frees you up. Just simplify the mind.
And obviously, if you told that on air, then you'd get, you know, the Cameron Bancrofts and the
waves
of this world would be saying, oh, we're going to move, let's move mid-on wider while you were spinning your bat in order to try and throw you off your...
Yeah, and I think it did help in the fact that I wasn't overthinking everything. I was just sort of concentrating, staying in my little bubble. And the best batsman, not that I'm ever going to be one of those, but you watch the best batsman with their routine. Jacques Callis always used to walk to square leg and back just to stay in his zone. They all have the certain routines. And I think my bowling's definitely got it. I needed something with the batting.
Well, on the batting, as a supplemental question, someone said here, I'll see if I can find. Oh, yes, it's Glennie Boy, apparently. Yeah, you were, for the last couple of tests, you were the number 11 batsman, and you've scored a sesquicentenary, as it were, 150. So that's pretty.
Yeah. Do you like my two sixes at the Oval?
Yes, boom, boom. That was fantastic. Yeah,
I need Jimmy back, don't I?
And
I need
then
Jimmy
they put
back.
You're at number 11. You must have been the highest scoring number 11 that England have ever fielded.
We actually had a bit of a rotating 9, 10, 11. Obviously, Jofra's new to Test cricket.
Yes.
Leachy has a really sound defence, but is never going to score at like pace. So we had a bit of a floating, you know, if a batsman was still going, get Leachy higher to give the batsman more time just to bat,
etc.
So there's a bit of a... So at Old Trafford, I was used to go in 9, and then there was a change at tea. We put Jofra back to 9. So all three of us had our pads on, and it was like, next. And
as a senior player, you don't have any ego about that.
The only thing with batting 11, which, because I've not batted 11 much in my career, I started out at 11 when I started off with Leicestershire. It is such a rush from that last wicket going to then getting your pads off, getting your bowling boots on, doing your routine. So many of the time I was bowling my first ball in an Ashes test, having not had done a warm-up or anything.
Welcome to Jimmy's world.
Welcome to Jimmy's world. He's done that for 43 years or whatever it is.
Well, you ended on a series of good not-outs anyway.
yeah, it's good for creeping the average up by 0.1 every time.
Now, of course, we've addressed this business of you and David Warner, but Jonathan wants to know what it's like having a beer with him afterwards, or did you have a beer with him afterwards at all?
All the Aussies came into the England change room. It's probably a bit old school, I don't know, but it's one of the greatest things about cricket, which I love. It went back to even when I played league cricket for Edgerton Park on a Saturday. You'd always have a beer with the opposition after the game, and Ashes cricket's no different, I think.
That's terrific. You know,
my dad's era, they might have done it after each test match, I think. But now it's just after the series, and we go into the Sydney change room in Australia, and they come into the Oval change room in England. And you have such battles with these people.
Yeah.
Over 6 weeks, 7 weeks. And you say things that you'd probably never say to anyone in a street in the battle.
Yeah.
You form opinions on people as a team. You win, you lose. You see them celebrate, you see us celebrate. So you share so much that actually you're probably similar people, really, at the end of the day. You go through the same thing. The thing about cricket, you're always going to fail.
Yeah.
You're always going to get naught at some stage. You're always going to drop a catch. You're always going to take a great catch. You're always going to get wickets. So you go through the same thing as teams. And actually, to be able to relax after the series, probably for an hour and a half. And I spent a lot of my time chatting to Tim Payne, who I played with at Hobart Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Jimmy Patterson and Peter Sidlett, obviously played with at Notts. Graham Hick, who I was a little bit starstruck by almost. You know, I'd not really met Hickey before.
Gosh.
So to have a beer with him, having watched him play for England through the 90s was awesome. So yeah, it's a great tradition, and I wonder if we're the only sport that does it.
It's a bit like what John Lennon said once in an interview about how tight the Beatles were throughout the 60s until it started to go, of course, was because no one else understood what it was to be a Beatle. And it's a bit like that, is that the Australians may be the enemy, but they understand what it's like to be a Test cricketer, especially an Ashes series, which is of particular intensity.
Yeah.
And there wasn't that much needle, was there? I mean, it was a bit between Matthew Wade and Jofra by the look of it, but it didn't seem...
I had the best seat in the house for that. I was fielding at mid-off.
What was that about exactly?
There wasn't any sort of verbals.
Oh, right. It was just
theatre.
Oh, fabulous, isn't it?
Jofra was, you know, his follow-through was getting longer. His hands were going behind his back. They'd played together at Hobart too.
Ah, that's... So
I think there'd been a couple of little things, very tiny, minute things about Jofra bowling in a watch and all that sort of thing that's just completely irrelevant, but Jofra brings a great sort of theatre with his pace, and he just, for that little period of time, he got quite revved up, didn't he? And it was nice because Wade was on 80 or 90, and it was something was happening. That's what Test cricket's about.
Yes.
You go through little periods where not a lot might happen, and then you get these great periods where you feel like something's happening each ball. I was fielding at mid-off, just getting closer and closer, just like, oh, what's going on here? And
I don't know if this is true, but I felt that because, you know, the Holly Stand and the Western Terrace, you know, the famously more sort of aggressive and vocal elements in some of the grounds, because they treated Warner and Smith with unforgiving and unrelenting sandpaper comments and boos and so on, that sort of took the pressure off you to be quite so unpleasant, and you could actually show a bit more grace to them because... And it was wonderful to see Smith being cheered at the end.
Yeah, there wasn't any... angst, if that's the right word, in the series. There wasn't any real sledging or niggle. There's always your country versus country. Mm. There's always a lot of passion and a lot of competitiveness, but never at a stage where it was uncomfortable or teams were having to get separated. I think didn't Nathan Lyon say to Leachy, "How many beers do you owe me?" type thing after his one nutter after he dropped that ball. It's all that sort of humour. It's not vicious, which I think is good.
Oh, it's terrific.
It's a great spirit to be played in.
Absolutely right. And you see it amongst the fans, the Australians and the England fans sitting together, bantering together. It's not like there's a tribal hatred or anything, is there?
Kate Ruddle's asked a nice one, which is a tough one for you, actually. Which moment was greater for you this summer? England winning the World Cup or Norwich beating Man City?
That's a really interesting
one. Which was more unexpected?
Well, beating Man City was completely unexpected. We had 8 players on the bench. I mean, it was unbelievable that, you know, with so much injury. Maybe that freed up the side, but it was glorious to see, you know, Timo Pukki, who's our great striker, of course, on fabulous form. Todd Cantwell is a wonderful attacking midfielder who played really well. And I'm particularly pleased because he's a local boy. He's actually a Norfolk chap. He comes from Dereham and came up through the academy. It's a young side playing fearlessly against a really mighty, mighty club. And those moments, I mean, you know, we had a win against Bayern Munich in 93, which was pretty astonishing. But there are not many occasions where we've played quite so well. There's something about Man City. We had them in the final of the League Cup years ago when I was a boy. And of course, it was Man City we were playing when Delia famously said, "Let's be having you."
Were you there for that game?
I wasn't. I wish I had been. Oh, my heavens, that was fun. And
would you have been out there too going, "Come on, where are we?"
That's
come
right. On. We don't have much silverware, Norwich, but we have these little legendary moments, the Goss goal, and now that will be added to our cabinet of silver memories at least.
You'll stay up.
I think we deserve to, and I think we will. It's a funny season, isn't it? I mean, we're not here to talk football, and I'm no expert, but it is interesting to see. I mean, obviously Liverpool and Man City, but how... you know, Arsenal and Tottenham in particular suddenly look tottery, Tottenham, isn't it? And Man United look, you know, that suddenly there's a bigger gap between the very top two and the others. And also in the middle, it seems that I think, you know, Norwich have every chance of sort of finishing like maybe 10 or eight, if we, you know, and we could dream higher.
Yeah, but, dream world.
Yeah, absolutely. But to be honest, I think the World Cup was just out of this world as a result. I was alone in Los Angeles watching it, you know, and it was early in the morning when it started. And there will be never an experience quite like that, because it's looking back on it, you always know the result. But at the time, every ball was a conceivable, you know, explosion that would...
Incredible, wasn't it?
Remarkable. We're so lucky. Now next time I'm going to rustle some paper as I go through.
On that World Cup thing, though, even our players and coaches, Trevor Bayliss, would watch it back when Sky would replay it and watch it in disbelief.
Yes.
So that's not just the fans. That's people involved in it.
That's right.
Because the people on the pitch... I mean, I've watched back Stokesy's knock at Headingley three or four times. I can't quite believe what happened. And you remember it so differently when you're there watching or involved. Yeah. Compared to watching it on the telly.
Yeah.
That's what sports does to you, isn't it?
It's I mean, those sixes of Hazelwood, I mean, just extraordinary. And that incredible one.
Switch it off
Lyon, though. He slightly lost balance just after, but while he shot it. Whoa. Yes, those were remarkable moments. And, of course, the Lyon missing of the... Because we've all, those of us who are hopeless village cricketers, have all done that, moved our head while catching the ball and trying to stump. And as we know, moving your head in any moving ball game is a disaster.
Nightmare.
And that's just what he did. It was like the most elementary error. And it was glorious, but I feel for him. What else have we got here? Who's the best player never to make it into an England side? That's a tricky one, isn't it? Probably me.
Do coaches, players listen to TMS or Sky whilst in the pavilion during a match and ever make tactical changes based on views or ideas expressed by the commentators?
That's an interesting one.
Sheep. It's an interesting one because we don't have the volume up in the changing room.
Yeah.
But we do have those little earpieces that you can get.
I've seen you, having them.
I'm a cricket fan, so I've always enjoyed listening to commentary and see what people are saying.
Yeah.
But I've never listened to a bit of analytical work and taken that into that game.
Right.
I've had times face-to-face, so there was Jonathan Agnew last summer came to me and said, you've got to bowl, try and get a short leg into Virat Kohli. And I was like, I'm not sure. He said, it might just stop him lunging, which might keep him inside the line if you hit him on the pad. That was his theory. Yeah. And actually at Lord's, one nipped down the slope, caught his inside edge and got caught short leg. And I remember looking up when he was given out. I looked up to the TMS box and Aggers was up there like celebrating, like jumping around. I got my phone back at 7 p.m. text, you owe me Sunday lunch. So that wasn't me listening to the radio and going, oh, that's a good point. He actually came to me and said, look, as a former bowler, I watch a lot of cricket. I'm seeing this. Might be worth thinking about. So there's tactical things that... You get, because obviously a lot of the commentators are greats of the game.
Yeah, and Nasser they see the and Michael game Atherton brilliantly. Are superb analysts, at least it seems to me they are. They really do read the game.
But I think as a player,
certainly
if they're looking at you technically, which they tend to do more at batsmen than bowlers, if you start changing your technique on what the pundits are doing, you're a step behind.
Yeah.
You got to work with your coach
and
change what works for you. You can't be changing mid-test match a technique that...
No.
And that's where people get it wrong in international cricket, because the only time in our sport you get technically looked at is international cricket. You can do whatever you want in county cricket, and no one's going to be a pundit and go, your front foot's coming 3 or 4 inches across the off stump. As soon as you get into test cricket, bang, they're on you. Remember Rory Burns at the Ireland test match?
Heavens, yes.
His technique was the worst thing ever. And then suddenly he gets 100 at Edgbaston. And, oh, he's a really good player, that Rory Burns. He's disciplined, leaves outside off stump. So you've got to stick to what you do and not take too much interest in what the pundits are saying during a game.
And on the subject of punditry, I mean, I hope it's many, many years, but of course the day will come when you may have the choice of, you know, becoming a broadcasting pundit. I'm sure you'll be asked by one of the broadcasters to do it. And looking at, say, Michael Vaughan, who was an England captain, of course, a very successful batsman and some very high scores in his time. He has made that jump between being the one who is a recent player, who is kind of almost still a friend of the lads, and into being someone who now can criticise. I mean, the things he said about Johnny Bairstow and so on in the middle of the series were quite tough. And he obviously relishes being a kind of sharp critic rather than a friendly...
Sir Geoffrey Boycott, isn't
it? Well, that's right. Maybe it's a York thing.
Gets the headlines.
And he gets the headlines. But... are you aware that, I mean, have you thought about this in your own case, that maybe you, if you do in 4 years' time or something, decide to hang up your bowling boots and go into the commentary booth, that there will be a time when you're suddenly going, I don't know what they're thinking of down there. I mean, are they idiots? Will you start talking like that?
In a Yorkshire accent too?
Well, yeah, well, have to be. I don't know what's going off down there. That's what Fred Truman is. I don't know what's going off.
I think... naturally, as a pundit, you have to have honest opinions at times. I think as a player in the team currently, you understand that and you accept that.
Yeah.
When there's headline hunting, which is obvious to see, isn't it?
Yes.
You can just see it coming a mile off.
Yes.
That's when, as
a Vaughan player... Vaughan says Anderson and Broad must not bowl together anymore.
Yeah, I mean, that's just... it's clickbait, isn't it? You're just desperate for a headline there. I mean, why... I don't see any logic behind that statement. It's a great headline. It's quite an exciting headline to read. But actually, why would you... You pick your best team to try and win that test match.
Yeah.
So Jimmy and I have got a proven track record as a partnership that we create pressure and get wickets.
Which is unprecedented in all cricket, in England cricketing history. It's in the recent...
I don't see any advantage in splitting that up... until that happens naturally, really, or until we're not performing at the level we'd want to perform at together. Yeah. Like Courtney Walsh and Ambrose, you didn't split them.
Yeah.
You know, Donald and Pollock, you let these partnerships go and try and get as much from them as you can. While you sort of, it's one of those you don't know what you've lost till it's gone, do you?
Yeah.
And I think it's an easy thing to say, Broad and Anders shouldn't bowl together again, but actually. It's a great strength of English cricket that we've had over a long period of time, that when we bowl together, we give control and take wickets.
Yes.
So, yeah, I wouldn't jump on that headline. Jimmy was straight on the text to me when that headline came out. Yeah, I don't think he was overly impressed with it. But but also, like, Vaughan's a really good lad. Like, we can have a lot of banter with Vaughan. But he is in the Sir Geoffrey Boycott
mould.
He wants a headline. It tends to be at the end of a summer that he can sort of strike his headline and then go and relax for a few weeks. So,
and
I don't take it personally.
No.
And actually, as my dad always says, today's news is tomorrow's fish and chip paper.
And he's right, yeah. And I suppose we can end on the thought that it's looking into the future, into the coming winter. What you've done for cricket, what you and your fellow players in both forms of the game, is a really important part of the success of this summer. I have noticed people talking in pubs and restaurants and coffee bars and in the street. A lot of them know that I'm very keen on the cricket, so they'll come up to me, and goodness knows how many come up to you. And there's an excitement in the air about not just England cricket, but the game itself. And that is a wonderful thing, because one hopes there are girls and boys now going to nets in the winter, it'll be, of course, but also just thinking about cricket and playing it and reading books about it and getting excited and watching YouTubes about technique and so on. And that the future may be brighter now for cricket in this country than it has been perhaps for a while, which is only good.
The influence of this summer is... it's the most I've heard people talk about cricket in my cricketing career. So obviously 2005 was a different level. But to have people getting excited and enjoying the drama that we've always loved.
Mm.
We know cricket brings that sort of excitement. But to have new fans and kids playing the game is special. And throughout this Ashes series, you always get... text from friends, oh, can I come to the cricket? Whereas this summer was, I want to bring my kids to the cricket, you know, any chance, and that's special. And yeah, you get pictures of from your friends with the kids, and they've all got their little England shirts on and sun hats, and
yes,
it reminds me, that's how I felt about the game when I was 5 and 6.
Yeah,
so it gives me a lot of happiness when I see kids of that age now getting excited by the game, and you just need a bat and a ball.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
You can play. I mean, I used to play in the village I lived in. We had a just go to the village green and we'd play.
A tree is a wicket.
Yeah. A jumper to bowl from. Yeah. If you hit the window, you were out. If you hit the building, you got sick. So it was risk reward. We used to tape up a tennis ball so it can swing. You get sellotape over one side so it will
brilliant.
Swing.
Oh, you heard it here, folks. That's brilliant.
And
I
was always practicing to be Warne or Hayden or McGrath because Australia was successful, whereas England have had the success this summer that hopefully kids out there are being Stokes, Butler and Root.
And Broad, I hope. Listen, it's been such fun doing this series, and of course we hope we'll be able to do more podcasts, maybe while you're away. You're off to New Zealand, and then it'll be Sri Lanka.
South Africa, then Sri Lanka. This winter's touring. Yeah. So yeah, a lot going on. Some nice weather coming my way, which feels nice to say as we rushed in from the pouring rain to record this podcast. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun this summer, hasn't it?
It has. It's been wonderful. It's a great note on which to end. Thank you, Stuart Broad.
Thank you.